Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He was never taught to keep his opinions to himself. That's why we love him. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So we're playing Where in the World's Mike Wilner once again. Nobody's picking up the phone of the hotel. I call us BS in that. Anyhow, we'll find Wilner at some point. Honest to God. Let's give away some Bills tickets. I'm in such a good freaking mood this morning. Let's give away Bills tickets. We are going to give away a pair of Bills tickets to see the Packers play the Bills on December 14th in Buffalo. You'll also get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. We're giving away a couple of tickets. Tim and Sydney are giving away a couple of tickets. Brady and Walker are giving away a couple of tickets as well all week long. So let's do this. If there's three shows every day, giving away two tickets, that's six tickets a day. 5 days in the week is 30. So all week long, we're sending 30 lucky people to see the Bills play the Packers in Buffalo. And you'll also get exclusive pregame hospitality at the Rogers Tap House, by the way. And don't forget, if you're a Rogers customer, when you're down there, you have a share everything plan. You can roam like home for just $5 a day. All you have to do is text travel to 222 to enroll. I hope Wilner did that. Roam like home. Again, we're giving away two tickets to see the Bills and the Packers play in Buffalo on December 14th. And you get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. I got to pick a number here. Why don't we pick, let's see. We've talked to Wilner the last 12 times we've talked to Wilner. He's been late getting on the line 12 times. So why don't we take the 12th caller through at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. 12th caller through. You will get two tickets to see the Bills and the Packers play in Buffalo on December 14th, and you'll get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. Do we have Wilner? Oh, my God. Again, 12th caller through, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Wilner, what the hell's wrong with you?
Apparently, Travis the hotel wasn't picking up. That's not good.
The hotel picks up all the time. You're not staying at the Dewdrop Inn, for God's sake. You're not staying at the hostel. Are you staying at a hostel? Please tell me you're not staying at a hostel. No, I got lucky in a hostel one time. What? You're not in a hostel.
No, I can't. I'm not at a hostel.
All right. Just wanted to make sure.
But I'm at a hotel where there's nobody at the front desk to pick the phone up. Or in wherever they pick phones up at hotels.
We couldn't call you on the cell phone?
He didn't. I'm calling you on my cell phone right now.
So let me get this straight. We called you on a hotel phone that wasn't answered, and now you're on a cell phone. So we could have just called you on a cell phone, and this would have been okay.
Apparently, yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Travis says that he was instructed by you not to call his cell phone.
Well, everybody doesn't. Well, you know, we don't want. We want to call.
So you've been caught lying.
Everybody as little money as possible. So it's better to call the hotel phone.
You've been caught. But you still have to pay for it if you call the hotel phone. Don't you have a Rogers Roam Like Home plan?
Nope. I only have a travel pack.
Oh, my God. Okay. Anyhow, I'm sorry. You're going to get in trouble for that. We'll have to talk about baseball. When does John Lester sign and where does he sign?
Wait a minute. I'm going to get in trouble for that?
Just where does John... I'm kidding. Oh, I kid. You know I love to kid you, Mike Wilner. Where's John Lester going to sign?
Well, I've been thinking it's going to be the Cubs pretty much since August. Mm-hmm. So I'll stick with that. But apparently we're going to find out today.
Yeah, it sounds like it, doesn't it? It sounds like the Giants have really kind of put the full court press on. I guess people in the American League or people in Toronto, our biggest concern would be, will he be coming back to the American League East? It appears as if, doesn't it, Mike, that the Boston Red Sox are, if not out of the equation, certainly not one of the two teams that most people think will be the finalists.
Yeah, I don't think they're out, but yeah, I think if there's a top three, they're three. So it looks good from a Blue Jays perspective that they don't have to worry about John Lester. Although, you look at the Blue Jays now as currently constructed, and they should murder left-handed pitching. So I guess John Lester's still John Lester. But you wouldn't mind having some extra southpaws in the division.
What do you make of the Chicago White Sox? Nice bit of business on the part of the White Sox, getting Jeff Samardzija for Marcus Semien and Chris Bassett, and also a third player, and then apparently closing in on a four-year, $46 million deal for David Robertson. Let's talk about that deal for Robertson. We'd heard 4 for $40 in that neighborhood. 4 for $46 strikes me as just a shade. Boy, that's a shade high, isn't it?
Well, you know, Miller got offered 4 and $40, Andrew Miller, and mm-hmm. wound up signing for 36. And David Robertson's much better than Andrew Miller. David Robertson has had four really, really good relief seasons in a row. Only one of them is a closer, but that's one more closer mm-hmm. season than Andrew Miller's had.
True.
Right? And Andrew Miller's only had one good season, though it was a really good season. So, you know, for me, I think David Robertson is worth much more than Andrew Miller is, and he found someone who agreed, I guess.
The New York Yankees now, and it's funny because I went on a couple of boards just to check this out. There seems to be a lot of concern on the part of Yankees fans that the team isn't retaining somebody that, you know, they kind of nurtured into a role. And it's not the first time. I mean, a lot of people look at some of the decisions the Yankees have made, not just with this guy, but even a lot of people think they jumped the gun. They were a little too quick to sort of tie the can to Russell Martin amongst some other players as well. This kind of surprises me, doesn't it? Because here's a guy, you know he can close in New York. We don't know if he can close for a team that's going to win a World Series, and we know that. But you know he can close in New York. You've developed him into that role. You've ridden the learning curve with him. You've probably put in a fair amount of your own resources, both financial and coaching resources, into developing this guy. And then you let him walk. And you know, I understand you've got Dylan Betances, who's lights out. But, man, it just seems to me that this is kind of an odd way to do business if you're the New York Yankees.
Definitely different. You know, I mean, when the Yankees had their dynasty, they did it, and I guess they retained being great by locking up those guys that they had developed, the core of Bernie Williams and Derek Jeter and Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit. Those guys never hit free agency. Pettit did, like, on the third try, he finally left. But the Yankees kept holding on to their own guys, and that was their strength. I mean, they found good players, and then because they had so much money, they never let him leave. So it is a little bit different to allow Robertson to go. But I guess they really, really love Andrew Miller. And Betances gives them that weapon that they could afford to let Robertson leave. Although word was they were pretty intensely interested in keeping him around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this was his choice too. And maybe he wanted to go somewhere where he was undisputedly the guy, and as opposed to being part of a three-headed beast with two relievers who may wind up being better than him over time.
No, that's entirely possible. I found it odd that type of generally that's the type of guy an organization likes to lock up. I mean, I think we all knew that it was going to be you were going to have to overpay for starting pitchers in the market this year. I don't think it was that much of a surprise. Again, it just seems to me that when you have a guy like that, I suppose Andrew Miller, can serve your cause just as well. But I'm also a believer that at some point you have to reap the benefits of some of the resources that you've invested in developing a player.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and maybe for them that's potential now.
Oh, you're right.
Now that he's cheaper. And they didn't want to spend $20 million on the back of the bullpen.
Well, they've always been sort of looking for the next Mariano Rivera to John Wetland comparison. So maybe this is, although I thought Robertson was the Mariano Rivera to Wetland comparison when Rivera was finishing out his career. But there you go, Mike. What are you hearing about the Blue Jays at the meetings? Bob Elliott had reported that they had interest in Greg Holland. I think a lot of people would have interest in Greg Holland. Where do you see them going for relief help right now? And I guess maybe Robertson, this might clear it up a bit too.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the second tier of relievers is still pretty big, and they were never going to get Robertson. I mean, I wrote a column that's going up on sportsnet.ca very shortly. It had to be reworked a little bit after Robertson signed, but basically to say, the Jays are better off taking the money that it would cost to sign David Robertson and signing four guys. And I think that's what they're going to do. Now, the second tier is still pretty well-populated. Nobody's off the market yet with K-Rod and Sergio Romo and Jason Grilly and a couple of other guys in there. And I think Luke Gregerson as well, who's not a closer yet, but could be. I think they take a shot at one of those guys, and I think that they look at some of the cheap, used to be really good coming off of injury relievers, specifically guys like Jason Mott and Alexi Agondo and John Axford, all three of whom are out there, all three of whom were among the best relievers in the game just like 2-3 years ago, and all three of whom can be had for next to nothing relative to what Robertson and Miller went for. So, they don't match up with the Royals for a deal to get any of Holland, Davis, or Herrera, one of whom I think is going to move.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they can bring a third team in, it's going to be tough. But I'm just hoping that they go that route. I would love to, I'd love to see all three of those guys with the Blue Jays, one or two of whom could wind up being a serious big-time back-of-the-bullpen guy for them.
You would rather have that than... Well, you would rather have that than
along
somebody...
One of the second-tier people.
Right, exactly.
I think you can bring in one of those guys, like, say, Gregerson. I think Gregerson maybe costs you $6 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get Mott, Agondo, and Axford combined for $4.5 million.
Mike Wilner joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The market for Deonner Navarro, how much of what is going on with Arizona and Montero, how much of that has an impact on Navarro on a possible destination for him?
Yeah, it's interesting because, Montero's clearly a superior offensive catcher to Navarro, but Navarro had a very good year last year and had a very good half year in 2013 and he's young, and you can sell people on the fact that, he's it's only 1 year, but he's a lot cheaper, and he's a good offensive catcher. So I think you watch very carefully who's interested in Montero and who doesn't get him, and you make some phone calls. But the Blue Jays have a few teams interested in Deonner Navarro already. They have trades that they could make, but it's not what they want to get back. It's not enough of a value for them to deal him. So they're waiting for teams to meet their price on Navarro. And once they do, they'll be able to deal him. And maybe whoever misses out on Montero, feels like, okay, it's time to give the Blue Jays what they're looking for.
Mr. Woolner, I'm going to let you go rest your vocal cords. I presume you'll be on Tim and Sid as well.
That's the word on the street.
The word on the street. They're working you way too hard.
Hey, that's what I'm here for.
I know. But I can't believe your hotel still doesn't have a someone answering the phone. You should go down.
Yesterday.
You should go down and take
morning a morning for Brady and Walker, so they like it when Favreau calls. I guess they don't like it when Travis calls.
Well, that could be. There's plenty of that going around in this city, believe me. Mr. Wilner, thank you so much for doing this. Safe reporting, my friend. Safe reporting. Mike Wilner of our Blue Jays radio crew, host of our pre- and post-game show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. He and Travis are now going to talk for about an hour off air. Honest to God, I've never... You just never call up and go right in the air. The two of them have to talk for like 20 minutes. It's a toss-up between Wilner and Morosi as to who wastes more of Travis's time. Morosi wanting updates on hockey and Wilner just wanting to chat. They're probably complaining about me right now, and Wilner's saying, how come Blair throws me under the bus all the time? Anyhow, we appreciate Mike joining us. He's doing yeoman-like work at the winter meetings. So the draw is set. Like me, you probably watched the draw. I'm hoping you watched the draw on Saturday. The draw is set for the Women's World Cup in Canada, the FIFA Women's World Cup 2015. John Herdman is head coach of the Canadian National Women's Soccer Team. John Herdman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. And I guess, John, if you can congratulate anybody on a draw, congratulations on a draw that... I think almost worked out the way you would have wanted it to work out, didn't it?
Yeah, look, it was a good draw. The day before, I guess me and Christine, we sat there at the press conference, and it all sort of dawned on us, look, this is real now. We've been talking about this event, and, you know, when we turned up to the draw, it was like that goosebump moment, and I was asked the question, you know, which team would you like for the opening game? And there was only one team that came to mind, which was my New Zealand team. You know, I'd worked with that group of women for a good 6 years. I've only worked with two women's teams in the international game, and to have those teams together, playing together in one moment where you've got 50-odd thousand people, it would have just been surreal. So we got New Zealand. They're a good team, a very good team. That's not an easy game, but it's not the hardest game. And the other two teams are definitely tough matches for Canada. It's not a group we can drop into fourth gear. We have to stay in fifth gear the whole time to win the group.
How important is it going to be, John, to when you look ahead, and I know you don't want to look ahead too much to after the round robin or after the pool competition, but how important is it in this type of an event to finish first in your group?
Yeah, it's really important for Canada. I mean, some groups, they may actually want to finish second or even third, depending on what's happening in the other groups. But I think for Canada, it's absolutely crucial because we understand our country and we understand some of the challenges of moving from, you know, east to west and west to east. So if you finish first in this group, you really minimize the risk of travel fatigue. Mm-hmm. And that has a major impact on our players when you look at the importance of recovery and regeneration in a, you know, 30-day tournament with seven games interspersed in there. So we want to minimize as many effects as we can. And if you win your group one, there's an argument you can play lesser opposition. You never know how the other groups are going to go, but that's the theory. And you're able to stay predominantly on the West Coast.
It seems to me, John, that what you want to do in a tournament like this is, once you're on the pitch, you know, it's a match. And match events take over and match elements take over. But it seems to me that if you can make the stuff around it as favorable as possible, whether that's less travel or better weather or a better schedule to allow for recovery, that's kind of the coach's dream, isn't it? I mean, I know you can't obviously plan the weather, but you kind of like to remove as many distractions or elements as you can so that when it gets down to it, it's what happens on the pitch that determines who wins in that particular day.
Absolutely. And look, we've been obsessing over these details. When we put road to the World Cup plan, we look back at, you know, some of our learnings. I've now been to five of these events, FIFA events now, tournaments, where every one I've learned something new and different about how I do it. And we started with the end in mind. We looked at the absolute worst case scenario. I used some inspiration from Admundsen's quest for the pole and how he planned things out and looked at pretty much preparing for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, literally worked back from that final game as if that we've just had to play all the hardest teams in the hottest temperatures with some of our best players missing, with some games down to 10 men, with some, you know, three games going to extra time, and then put it to my staff across the four corners, mental, physical, social, emotional, technical. Look, if this is the worst case, how do we prepare the players? So we looked at some of the probabilities and how we could minimize all of the things that you're alluding to. So we have heat protocols in place. The players are going through some heat acclimatization in a really hot temperature prior to try and increase the oxygen production, as well as to give them a mental mindset that they've trained for this. We've looked at other components, like looking all the in-game scenarios and rehearsing some of those, you know, 10-man strategies, goal-down strategies in our Cyprus Cup event that we'll have in March. And et cetera. You know, we've done everything. Well, again, we're hoping we can do everything we can to give this group of women the best chance to have the best experience they've ever had at home in Canada. And that's what we obsess about and lose sleep over.
John, the fact that you have a fairly experienced group, I mean, leave aside the sort of the physical and physiological issues there, but would that allow them to retain that information or retain that, you know, that sense of, well, I guess information is the right word, retain the information that you and the coaching staff gives them? Is it easier to do it with a mature team, with a more experienced team, a team that knows you, compared to a team where maybe there were, you know, seven or eight newcomers or seven or eight players who hadn't played in a big competition before?
Look, I think it's pros and cons. There's definite advantages of having those senior players. They're just more wily and more, you know, they have that wisdom of the game. They understand the context they're going into. They know the types of things that are going to occur. And therefore, like we talk about this thing, cognitive load, they don't have to think about things that other players might have to. It's just all autonomous now. But on this same side as that, the flip side, you've got, you know, the experiences a lot of these players have amassed. Not all experience is good experience.
Mm-hmm.
They've accumulated a whole raft of scars through bad experiences in tournaments that, you know, if you don't get the mental training right and the processes around their preparation mentally, then they can be hijacked pretty quickly by some of those emotional experiences they've had. Whereas the young players, they've just had no real experience, the Kadisha Buchanan's, the Jesse Flemings, and they just get out there without any reference points. So it definitely has pros and cons, but I think the senior group are taking a massive leadership role in this tournament, in the preparation for it. Their work off and on the pitch has been phenomenal, to the point where, you know, we've been able to build infrastructure, technical leadership infrastructures, where a group of players look at on-field connection, and we have a group of players looking at off-field connection. And my job is just to ask that group hard questions. And that's the beauty of having these senior players. They really are taking responsibility for this opportunity they have.
John Herdman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How successful have you been in eliminating the whole, you know, the controversy over the artificial turf from entering into that, I don't want to say bubble, but from sort of entering in that comfort zone you want your players to have? I mean, clearly you want them to be focused on what they have to be focused on to prepare and to play on the field. You don't want them having their attention diverted by, I guess, internal political issues like that. But how successful have you been in that regard? And has that been difficult for you?
Yeah, look, it's definitely been a distraction, and I think it's been tough for those people who are working behind the scenes to put this event on. I mean, people are are working 90 hours a week to make sure Canada can have such a wonderful event. And this whole tournament was built on, you know, it was going to be played on turf. It was this one-off opportunity that everyone bought into when the event was actually, you know, celebrated when Canada won the bid. And I think the reality is it's just being, I guess, tough because people are on task trying to do the job that they have to do, which is to make this great event possible. And then this team are on task trying to make sure that they can perform at their best. And then you've got this clutter, which, you know, in some ways in people's minds, this is a really important discussion point. But in others, it's, look, let's get on with the event because the context is this is what it was. Mm-hmm. And it's what it's always been. So why is it an issue now, right close to the event? But the beauty for us is the team have been excellent. They just are desperate to play at home. They're excited about playing in Canada. And whether it's turf, grass, sand, whatever's thrown at them, they're going to be ready for it. And I guess in the other way, we've looked at it and say, look, let's become turf experts. The majority of these players play on turf. They've grown up on it. So, you know, while others worry about it, we'll use it to our advantage.
John, it was very good to talk to you this morning. Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Jeff, and have a great Christmas.
You too, John. You and yours. That is John Herdman. He's head coach of the Canadian national women's team. Canada got a very favorable draw alongside New Zealand. This is in Group A. China, at one point, a real power in women's soccer. They've kind of slipped a bit. New Zealand, which is Herdman's former team, and the Netherlands, which will be making their debut in the World Cup in Group A. And it really couldn't have worked out better for Canada, the U.S. team. And, of course, the U.S., Canada's arch rivals, are in a really tough group with Australia, Sweden, and Nigeria. Both Sweden and Nigeria capable of being real handfuls for the U.S. And as you heard John Herdman say, if Canada finishes first in this pool, it mitigates the amount of travel they have to do. And that will be a big, big benefit when you go into the quarterfinals, the semifinals. And indeed, if Canada does finish first, there is a pathway through to the semifinals that would effectively favor Canada over some of the countries they have to face. And I mean, if you're Canada, I would think the teams right now that concern you are Germany, the U.S., of course. Probably Japan, France, and then maybe you could put Sweden in that category. But I would say those four countries certainly would concern Canada more than any other group. And I guess if I had to put them in order, I'd go USA, Germany, Japan, and France. Of course, it was the French team that Canada played and defeated in order to get the bronze medal at the London Olympics. We appreciate John Herdman joining us. Dale Scott is a longtime Major League umpire. He became the first active openly gay male official in any of the four major North American sports to come out. He did so after he provided a picture of himself and his husband in the October edition of Referee Magazine. Somehow, it didn't hit the sort of wider media until about 2 weeks ago, and Dale Scott's been making a lot of appearances, doing a lot of speaking, a lot of interviews. He will join us at 11:40. Dale Scott, the first openly gay active male official in any of the four major American sports. Dale Scott joins the Jeff Blair Show at 11:40.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner. Millard, Jaffe, McLean will be joined by Louis Jean from TVA Sports at 12:40. And congratulations to Ron Myers in Richmond Hill, Ontario. You have won a pair of tickets to see the Bills and the Green Bay Packers play in Buffalo on Sunday. You also get, what? It's Buffalo. in Buffalo on Sunday. Plus, you also get exclusive pregame hospitality at the Rogers Tap House. And don't forget, if you're a Rogers customer with the Share Everything plan, you can roam like home for just $5 a day. Just text TRAVEL to 222 to enroll. That's a lot of twos, 2222 to enroll. And Tim and Sid will give away a couple of tickets this afternoon. Brady and Walker, Tim and Sid, myself, we're giving away tickets all week long. Two tickets to see the Bills and the Green Bay Packers in Buffalo. So again, congratulations to Ron Myers from Richmond Hill, Ontario. You are today's winner. At some point, having an openly gay umpire, whether it's male or female, whether it's baseball, basketball, hockey, at some point it's hopefully it frankly won't be a story. At some point, hopefully before I finish doing this job, it won't be something that that is a news story. It's classified as a news story. Unfortunately, or I guess fortunately in some ways, depending on how you want to look at it, it's still a topic of interest for people. Dale Scott, who is a terrific major league umpire, been an umpire for a long time, well regarded, became the first openly gay active male official in any of the four major American sports, and this is. Kind of interesting the way it happened. He was the subject of a feature article in Referee Magazine, the October issue, which is a trade magazine for sports officials and other people. And he provided a picture of his partner of 28 years, Michael Roush, for the article. And I've seen the article and read the article. The article's fine and everything. And Dale Scott joins us now in the Jeff Blair Show. And Dale, thanks a lot for doing this. And it just struck me as odd. And as someone pointed out to me, you know, this was picked up. Outsports.com did an interview with you, and then ESPN, everybody picked up. Somebody said to me, but this is sort of like a 2 month or a 6 week old story, and now it's a story again. It really is. It's odd the way it developed, wasn't it? And did it surprise you, Dale? I mean, after the picture and everything, you know, did you expect that you'd be inundated with calls? And, you know, 6 weeks go by and there aren't a lot of calls.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff, by the way, and good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, it was, you explained it exactly right. Referee had did this story that was about my career and things. They did a great job at it. At the end, they said, yeah, you know, we have a lot of umpire pictures. Do you have any personal pictures related to the story? Part of the story is when I was a disc jockey years ago in Eugene, Oregon, where I grew up. And they wanted a picture of that, if I had that. And so I sent them some pictures. But I thought, you know, here's this story about my career. They've talked to people that names that I gave them from a couple of people that I went to, you know, junior high school with that I've known for years and years. And a gentleman that I used to work with at the radio station. And I thought, you know, all these people and the person that's been with me and through this journey since after my first year in the big leagues, you know, it just doesn't seem right that he shouldn't be included in this. I didn't want the story to be about that, but mm-hmm. I just thought, you know, I would like to submit a picture of us. And I talked to Mike about it first. I said, listen, you know, I don't have to do this. What do you think? It just didn't seem right that you're not included since you're so such an important part of my life. So we decided to put a picture of him and I on our way to Australia this past March when we had the opening. I was working the opening series with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. And the caption I put on there was Dale Scott with his longtime companion, Michael Roush. Well, Referee Magazine has a circulation of only about 40,000 or so. It's a trade magazine, like you said, and it has no over-the-counter or you know, mm-hmm. you have to subscribe to get it. So it wasn't going out there to a zillion people. But somebody did pick it up at Outsports, and they contacted me, and this was right at the end of the season, right before the playoffs. And they said they wanted to write a little story about, you know, about me coming out because of that picture. And I said, well, you know, I don't I don't mind talking to you. We can do this, but let's wait till after the playoffs and everything. We don't need to, you know, be doing it now. And he said, not a problem. He called me back, you know, right middle of November, and we had a nice conversation. And they posted it a week ago today. And to answer your question, was I surprised? I was really surprised how quickly this story, you know, blew up on my a little funny story. Last Tuesday, I'm at home in Portland. I knew it was coming out Tuesday morning, but I really wasn't thinking that much about it, to be honest with you. And I kind of slept in, woke up at about 9:30. The story posted at 8:30 Pacific time. And when I woke up, my ringer was off of my phone. I look at my phone. Already my phone was blowing up. I had calls. I had texts. I had emails. And I thought, ooh, that's right. The story went out today. It was amazing how quickly. I mean, you know, not that we should be surprised about these things with social media and the internet, but boy, when you're in the middle of it, it is amazing how quickly things happen.
And Dale Scott joins us on the Jeff Blair Show, and most of the response has been overwhelmingly positive, has it not?
It has. It's been unbelievably positive. Just the email address that I had on the Outsports website, you know, at the story was you know, over 200 emails. The vast majority of them are from people I've never met before, but I had a few from people that I knew in the minor leagues that I haven't talked to in years, people that I grew up with that I hadn't talked to in years. But it's been overwhelmingly positive. There's been a couple stupid emails in there, but you know, I kind of expected that. But you know, it was a slow process when you consider that this magazine article and that picture was a couple months ago.
Now, you've said in articles I've read, I mean, baseball was aware of this. I mean, I hate using the phrase aware because it makes it sound as if you had an illness or something. But I mean, baseball knew of the relationship. Your fellow umpires knew of it. Are you concerned about any player reaction to this? Because it gets, and let me ask you, because it gets pretty heated out there, and you know as well as I do, some of the words that get thrown around aren't suitable for family radio. Are you concerned about that? Or, you know, is your training as an umpire, will that allow you to sort of, you know, umpires have a filter, right? They know the words and they know the words, as someone once told me.
Yeah, well, that's true. And am I concerned? You know, not really. Will it happen? It might. And if it does, I'll deal with it. It's just like any other argument. If you say the wrong thing, you're going to probably have to leave the game. But I'm not overly concerned about that. I think, quite frankly, Jeff, and maybe I'm naive, but I think by March when I start spring training and April when the season starts, it's really going to be just old news and really not news. But you're right. In the heat of the moment, somebody disagrees with a strike three call or something. They may say something that's not appropriate. But I can take care of that. That's what I've been doing for, you know, 29 plus years, and I'll just do it. You know, I've told a lot of people that in some of the interviews I've done this past week that, you know, and it also with, you know possible emails or messages that aren't very positive. You know, if somebody has a real problem with this, it's really not my problem. It's their problem, and I'm hopeful, like you said at the beginning of this segment, I'm hopeful that someday this is just not going to be a story at all.
Dale, listen, we appreciate you joining us. Wish I had more time to talk, but we'll do this again. Have a great off season. Look forward to seeing you in spring training and during the regular season, my friend. You be well.
Jeff, I really appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. That's Dale Scott, longtime Major League umpire. Terrific umpire. That's it for us. Hockey Central's next. Have a great day, everybody.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand.